Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Yes, that's right. We're going to do it right. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And this is a special edition for me because it's about the youth group that we helped to found some 46 years ago. But just like I did in 2025, I am going to remind you that there is still Gaza, of genocide going on in Gaza. There is still a 34-count felon in the White House. And now we can add some other things to his dossier, war criminal, a protector of pedophiles. But yet we still have him sitting at the throne. And so I know me and Mama Juju talked about that before coming on, like what is it going to take for people to realize that he's not just a danger to this country. And I'm talking about the president of the United States, but he actually is a danger to world peace and world democracy. So people are looking at us in this country, like what y'all going to do about that man? And we seem to be bewildered as to what we should and can do with him. So in 2026, you know, last year was, if you believe in the Chinese calendar, was the year of the snake, meaning that we shed unnecessary baggage, we shed pains and suffering, we shed old ways of thinking. And this year is the year of the horse. So I like to think of a visual of us galloping into the new year, fresh, ready for the struggle, ready for the fight, ready for the confrontation, and ready to defend our democracy and practice self-determination. And so we are here in the belly of the beast, trying to make do, but also trying to advance the liberation of our people. So who we have today, and we're not in the studio still, they are still working on Harris Stowe State University, where our studio is, and hopefully we'll get in there soon, because there are just certain features when you're actually in the studio that you don't have to worry about when you're doing it on your own. But as we often do, we use Kaumba creativity and we make do with what we have. And so that's what we're going to do today. So this year, in a couple of weeks, we will be celebrating the 46th anniversary of the Organization for Black Struggle and the Youth Council for Positive Development. And one of the things that we've done in 2025 is put together a commemorative edition for both organizations. So the first one came out maybe about, I would say March or April. And the Youth Councils were supposed to come shortly after that, but then the tornado hit May 16th. So OBS and the Youth Council then got involved in the tornado relief efforts. And so we did get it finished before the end of 2025. And the first edition is the Organization for Black Struggle, like 45 years of the work that is done around coalition building, around the prison industrial complex, workers' rights, women's rights. And then the second part is not just the Youth Council's activities, but the activities that we did jointly with OBS, like the anniversary celebration. So putting them together, you get a pretty complete picture of all of the activities and the impact that the two organizations have had on this community and the people who came through here. So today we have Mama Juju Jacobs, who was one of the mama's in the program for the Maya program. And we have two alumni here, Sharifa Taylor and Halisi Lester. Now, good thing about you all is that you are in different states. So just getting your perspective about what's going on there and how you're looking at it. But you are all now grown, Khaleesi's a parent and a grandparent. How do you see the world that we're living in today? Like, did you ever think we would be at a place where we have somebody like a Trump in the White House doing all the things that he's done? I mean, literally destroying things. Because I think the metaphor of that East Wing coming down is exactly what he's doing to this country. So just from where you are talking with your circle of friends and family, I'll start with you, Sharifa. What does it look like in California? Because you all did some incredible things with that Prop 50. And so I'm so happy that the governor like took that step, because that's the kind of boldness that we need right now. So what's going on in California and how you're seeing the world right now?
I would say living in California is a good experience, especially now, because of steps of resistance like Prop 50. I would say, especially working at a nonprofit with similar values as OBS, I'm entrenched in that perspective every day, and so it makes it easier to think of how we can resist, how we can support each other for mutual aid. I would say, even though we do have those steps down about like resistance and mutual aid, there still is like the concern about the oversteps of the federal government, like how in Chicago and in DC the National Guard was sent out places, and even like how immigrants were being attacked by ICE, and so just thinking of ways to like actually combat that is imperative right now. But definitely people are constantly working on like steps to support one another while things are happening, creating tools for folks who are being targeted specifically. So yeah.
I'm going to ask you a follow-up question before I go to Khaleesi and Juju. You've been working on environmental justice for a few years now. So when you look at the existential threat of what's going on with the environment, how do you see that? Is that almost equally as important as the struggle for against racism and racial capitalism? Because where do you see that fitting in? Because if we don't have a planet, what I don't know what we do from there.
I would say they're interconnected. A lot of times with environmental justice, especially on the campaigns we do at CBE, Communities for a Better Environment, the type of threats that we see are like industrial polluters. And so people are valuing their business over the lives of the people who live in the communities where the businesses are based. And so, like you said, if we don't have a planet, we can't deal with any of the other things you're thinking about. And so they're deeply intertwined. And so getting folks outside of the community to share those values, to act on those values, is challenging, especially like at the government level, like the different levels that we act at, whether it's like city or municipal, county, and statewide, is very difficult. But when we do see changes, kind of like Prop 50, it is a good thing because we know that the values that we have are taken seriously, but it is like an ongoing struggle.
So one of the things I remember, St. Louis was the scene of a first school shooting some years ago. Yeah, I think it was 2022, at Central Vision and Performing Arts. And of course, the MIAT and OBS were very much concerned about that, because not only have we had young people going through there as students, but the principal at that time was a MIAT alumni. So when I got a chance to talk to Casey Seals, one of the things she said to me that really resonated with me, she said, had I not gone through the MIAT and got this kind of grounding, I don't know if I could have dealt with the situation. And sometimes you start to realize the impact of programs on young people that even at the time they may not see. They may not see it for years, but for her to articulate that really made me really affirm the value of a program like the MIAT. and the Youth Council for Positive Development. Would you agree with that, Halisi? And what do you see as, in terms of the grounding that you received? Because you probably were in there from the very beginning, so.
Oh, I was. I mean, I definitely agree with that because when I think about all the things that I experienced while a member, I mean, there were some things that you carry throughout life. I mean, for instance, being able to meet other youth and talk to them and see what their life is like. Sometimes those youth were not even in St. Louis. You know, I went to D.C. and met people there and people from New York and people from down south of Atlanta or Mississippi or, you know, all over the country, really. So when you get to see other people's perspectives and how they live, but also how similar they are to you. You know, you realize you guys have the same struggle. But then other stuff like, you know, planting trees for, Earth Day. Like, that's something that I'll never forget. We were down on the banks of the Mississippi River down on, you know, Riverview. And sometimes I go back by there and I look like, which one of those trees is the one that I helped plant? You
know?
Another big thing is, you know, the performance aspect and just being, you know, able to be in front of people and speak and, you know, stuff like that. That's very important because obviously that's something you use in school. That's something you may have to use at work eventually, you know, if you have to give a presentation, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there were a number of experiences that I had while a member of MIAT that I'm very grateful for that I think, you know, made me more well-rounded and able to deal with the world, you know, as I went along, you know, throughout the years.
Well, it's interesting that you used the travel thing because that came up time and time again, that one of the features that people really remember was going with the MBUF to the National Black United Front conventions, where you got to meet some of those young people who were in programs similar to the MIAT. Because, you know, when you hear in St. Louis, and you all would sometimes say this out loud, ain't nobody else doing this but us. Why we got to do that? And then to be able to go somewhere, it's like, oh, these young people are speaking Kiswahili, like they involved in the community. So that affirmation, I think, was important. And meeting some of the luminaries sometimes, like people may note that they had met Jesse Jackson. And they met, you know, people like that, that they never would have met it had they not been a part of the Youth Council. So, Juju, you got a different perspective because you came in as one of the mamas and the teachers, but you also then became a teacher. And so your interaction with young people, you know, is a range. And so I just want to check in with you about how you seeing. Because, you know, over the years, I think it's probably three generations of MIAT kids. And so you get a chance to see what it's like with the first cohort and then the second cohort. And then based on the world that we live in, what's really happening with young people and some of the challenges that they face.
Yeah, so I came in as one of the mamas, quote unquote, but I used to be in there learning my doggone self, you know, like, I was like, this is cool. I wish I was a kid. I originally came in when Kalimu, Baba Kalimu and Mom Dion were running it. And I was volunteering, helping, but basically I was just being one of the kids. And so, yeah, it was really, an amazing experience also. For me, because I was going to school to be a teacher, it gave me that practice and grounding in what it takes to develop Black children, powerful Black children, not just, you know, here, read this and do this. I used it every single year that I taught. I used everything that I learned working with YCPD. In the schools that I taught, like, it literally made me a better teacher. And just thinking about the generations and the years, the impact on the kids, I was able to see the difference in children who have never been in programs and experienced things like that. The disconnection that they have with our history, our culture, our status, our place in this country, our mission, our goal, how we organize was so impactful. That's why I used it so much in my classroom, like to at our identity, learning our identity and our history. I always talk about this. The very first class that I taught in New Orleans. So in 2015 was the first time I taught in New Orleans. My first teaching experience ever was at Pomoja here in St. Louis, which they have the same values. So it's easy to integrate what I learned to do and the values and all to instill them. So that was great. But to go to New Orleans, the very first classroom that I taught in, I kind of noticed the disconnection from history and culture, right? And so I asked those children, I said, and this was a sixth grade class, sixth, seventh grade class. I said, what is your nationality? I heard Irish. I heard Italian. There's a classroom full of black children now, full on looking like us and darker. I heard Native American, Italian, Irish. I heard I ne not one single child in that classroom ever said black, African. They never said it, and it blew my mind. And that's I think at the moment when I said the impact of a program like MIAT, which is the Saturday program for YCPD, is so important because basic, if you don't know who you are, then you can't figure out where you are in this place or where you're going. And that moment is when I said, oh yeah, I will always incorporate a part of the MIAT YCPD program, MIAT, into every classroom I teach.
Because you can't take that stuff for granted that somebody somewhere is teaching them that. So you got to
And they're
be real
not.
intentional. One of the things that stood out during the newsletter is that the people that were associated with the MIAT, a number of them were actually teachers. And so that made our lesson plans very intentional and what we call interdisciplinarian, because it wasn't just like you just do activity. You're incorporating math, science, history, all of that would be a part of it so that it was really fun. So I think one of the pictures in there is one of our parents who was an engineer, did a thing about physics, walking on eggshells, walking on eggs. And we didn't believe you could do it without busting up those eggs. But then she talked about like the law of physics. And we had to measure stuff. So there was not just you go walk on it, but like the why part, which is, I think, really helping to develop the critical thinking skills with black children, which is nine and void, I think, in the public schools today. Halisa, it looked like you were getting ready to add something. Did you want to?
Just no, I was just listening.
Oh,
Oh,
okay.
I have something to add if I can get a moment. As a teacher, let me tell you, there is a part, we have a creed. And I believe we're going to say it. Yep. So there's a part in the creed that I probably say in my head every day. And it's I'm obsessed with being with learning, promoting, and preserving Black history and culture. Yeah. So as a teacher, I would get these worksheets from Teachers Pay Teachers, and I would sit and color every single face on my worksheets brown and do their hair in curly hair, right? Because 99.9% of all of the documents you get are always white children. And I had another teacher say, why do you spend so many hours doing that? And I was like, because just like they have indoctrinated us to view white as right, through images, we have to reverse it through images. Our children have to see themselves. And yes, I am obsessed with it. And I used to hate that word until the creed. I used to hate the word obsessed. I thought it was something so bad. But yeah, I was obsessed with it. And I've spent years and hours and literally coloring and purposely finding different shades of brown. And that's how I always did my worksheets. Before I printed them, I would sit there and color every single face because I worked in a school where it was all Black children.
Yeah,
you know. And I think that is some of also the powerful impact of a program like that, where you gain so much self-pride and so much understanding of identity that you take those steps.
Yeah, what you're saying reminded me of the fact that we had Watoto, we call it Watoto, is Swahili for children, who were all different shades. And at some point, we even had a white youth. We had biracial youth, and so teaching the Watoto that there is a spectrum of shades, but we all are human. And for those of African descent, you have a particular grounding based on your nationality. So it really struck me, Juju, when you said that the kids in that class didn't even know what their nationality is, because I don't even know how you feel prideful when you see something Black if you don't consider yourself Black. So I just want to ask Khaleesi and Sharifa, going through life, what, as a Black person, and particularly you, Khaleesi, as a Black male, what did it mean to have that kind of imagery in your head about who you were, especially when you get to the workplaces? I know some of y'all first experienced it in schools that may not have like really respected and appreciated your nationality, but definitely when you get out in the workplace, you start to feel it.
Yeah, it was huge because I had a positive self-image, and I knew that I knew people, and particularly youth, you know, I knew like all my friends were doing stuff that was, that you would consider positive. I mean, I didn't have any friends that were, you know, kids are going to be kids and get in trouble from time to time. But I mean, for the most part, I didn't have any friends that were, you know, what you would call bad kids, or, you know, were engaging in any kind of activity that was, you know, illegal or detrimental or things like that. So, you know, from a self-worth standpoint, it was really important because I didn't think that I was a criminal. I didn't think that I was less than. I didn't think that I would not be able to compete or to be able to excel or to be able to, you know, participate in whatever, you know, I had to participate in, you know. So, yeah, it was definitely important from that standpoint not to, you know, internalize some of the things because, you know, I was and always have been a really big TV person. And you know, it's funny because my father, who some people may or may not know, is Colleen Wendacia. He used to kind of make fun of me about like how I used to like light-skinned women. But at the time of watching TV, I was born in 72. You know, 70s and 80s, that if you, there weren't very many Black people on TV.
That's
first
a
of all,
dark skin.
All, they were very fair-skinned. And so, you know, but watching TV, you know, you sometimes internalize these negative stereotypes. But, you know, one thing that my aunt helped me and YCPD helped me do is not to, you know, fall into that, you know, that trick of like, oh, you know, you and your people are not, you know, great people. Like those things never enter my mind because I knew that, you know, we were, and I knew that we were capable of based upon some of the things I learned, like people like Garrett Morgan, like people like, you know, Norbert Relux or Eli Whitney. And we can go down a list of, you know, Black people who have contributed mightily to this society, even to this day. You know what I mean? So
you made me think about
YCPD
some of
was
this.
Important.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say YCPD was very important in shaped my life in that way.
I was going to say, when you mentioned some of those inventors, that was a skit that the Youth Council did as part of the Youth Culture Theater. And that, again, was one of the ways that we incorporated stuff, because you all had to learn who those people were in order to portray them on stage. And so yeah, that helped, that was helpful. So Sharifa, for you as a Black woman who also has a certain amount of obstacles in this society, what was it like for you to have sort of that what I would call a shield to help you get through some of the sexism and patriarchal kind of behaviors and practices?
I think it set a great foundation, kind of like Khaleesi just said about like I knew who I was. I look kind of like Mama Juju said too. Like I looked for who I was in images. I had lots of great examples. I was remembering as I was listening to you all speak about the different talks that we would have, like when people like Dr. Cornel West would come and things like that, and. Besides, like the great works that all of our Black inventors have done, it showed me that there were different options out there, even if I might not have recognized it, especially when it comes to like career. And so it just helped me to like build a better sense of self. And I definitely see the way that things from my shown have shown up in my life as an adult. And definitely, I remember even like when applying for college, I wrote about like being in the youth council and how it influenced me. And so I think just overall, like having a relationship with the youth council and my really just developed my sense of self and helped navigate the way I see the world.
Yeah, you talked about that part in the youth creed that says I'll be obsessed with learning of Black history and culture. And actually, Juju, I'm starting to say that more just because of the intentional erasure of our history and culture by the MAGA folks. So, it's now illegal to do this. And I'm a big supporter of the African American History Museum in DC. And I had to pause when they decided that they were going to change something because Trump said that it was not favorable to white people, and they capitulated. So that's when it was time for the renewal of my annual donation. I said, I'm thinking about whether I'm going to continue to donate, because the whole point of a museum and preserving history is that you don't change it based on what somebody else thinks is the fact is a fact. And so I think for us, if you're grounded in that way, that's an offense to then start to tamper with history. Like, oh, maybe Dr. Martin Luther King really didn't, wasn't really a catalyst for the voting rights. I mean, if people start messing with the facts, then you really have nothing. And so that obsession, I think we really have to now really take on full force.
People.
I think I also, with that obsession, it has pulled me into communities, right? Because now when I go to other communities, any event that's a event for Black folks, I'm going. I'm going to sit in there. I'm going to, and it helped me to integrate into New Orleans, actually, because whatever is going on with whatever group, I'm at everybody's group. I'm in everybody's thing. I'm at the Mardi Gras Indians, people are like, don't go to the rehearsals, they get dangerous. I'm in there. I'm in there because I'm obsessed with it. I get a lot of knowledge being obsessed with it. And like you said, so they can't erase us. Like I've learned so much. I've actually had people from New Orleans say, you should give tours. Hell, you know more than we do about some of these places. I was like, yeah, I'm obsessed with it. That's what I was taught to do. Because we have to know. We have to know. I mean, like even knowing stuff like the fleur-de-lis was a sign that was burned into the skin of slaves. People loved that fleur-de-lis, fleur-de-lis, fleur-de-lis is like everywhere in New Orleans. And we have to know that that sign was used to mark us, Oh,
And
yeah.
if you don't know, Juju, how can you defend it? How can you promote it? How
That's
can you
right.
perpetuate it? That's the thing that I think
Exactly.
about, because all the erroneous things that get said about Black people, and particularly the history, and people don't even know if that's real or not. And Hollywood does a good job of merging the lines when folks start talk about what was in the movie. I said, well, that was the Hollywood version. You need to read the book, or you need to know what really happened, because that ain't it. And mm-hmm. so that's who's feeding us our history now, is Hollywood and social media. And there mm-hmm. are algorithms intentionally on social media that will help to destroy and confuse us. So I just think that for parents now, it's such, it's not a burden, but it's a huge responsibility now to be a parent, because it's not just that you control stuff in your home. These kids are exposed to like all kind of foolishness and detrimental to them. One of our families, one of our young people that grew up to be a mom, a mother, we had the unfortunate situation of one of her children committing suicide, 10 years old. And so then you start to think about, what else can we do? How is it that a young person think that there's nothing to be done, nothing, no hope for them, no place for them? And it makes you actually work a little bit harder to make sure that they understand there's a support system for you. And I'm not just talking about this particular kid, but you know, one of the things that I write about is, since COVID, the number of suicides among Black males has exponentially risen. And the rate now means that that's the third cause of death for young men, young Black men. And so this is the place where we should be ringing the alarm bell. Like, what do we do? And I'm not talking about the broader society. I'm talking about our community saying, whoa, whoa, what? But we're not even saying it. It's almost like we, you know, that's part of the collateral damage. But yet we are losing so much. The brain trust, partners for our daughters in the future. I mean, there's so much that gets lost when young Black men are carted off to jail for long periods of time, when they are murdered prematurely. I mean, I just don't understand why we are not sounding the alarm about those kinds of things that are happening within us, until it happens to us, and then we want to figure it out. But later on, and somebody just told me about this, and this is why you got to be filtering what your kids look at. Somebody sent me a thing about, on YouTube Kids, they actually show you how to commit suicide. Because I was thinking, and I don't know if this is the case with this kid, but my first question always is, how does one know how to hang themselves? I don't even know how to do a noose. So, but apparently on YouTube Kids, there's this thing about how to commit suicide, how to do the rope. And then there's challenges that kids can do with other kids. I bet you can't do it. Why? First of all, why is that on there? And then right. Why are we not doing something about it? And then why are we exposing our kids to that? So I just think that there's all these things that are impacting young people today that we act like we have no control over. And we do. We do. And I know it's hard, because we want our kids to have a phone. We want them to have the tablets. We want them to be connected to social media. But when Steve Jobs said that he would not let his kids have a tablet because of the algorithms that's going to get your child addicted to that device, ding, 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 ding. You know, our antenna should have went up. Well, wait a minute. It's the creator of this product doesn't let his kids do it because of how detrimental. Why would we expose our kids to it? So I just think that's part of being right. aware and having some critical thinking skills as parents, as human beings, as citizens, to say, this is harmful for our society, or this is harmful for my child, or this is harmful for my family, this is harmful for my community. Though that's the lens when you really are grounded that you use to like make decisions about all the other stuff. So, you know, I would just say that I'm thinking about one of the questions when we asked the alumni to send in something about the impact on their lives and incorporate that. But as we start to look at, like, over a period of time, like how the program, and this goes back to your point, Juju, impacted young people, that we had very few premature pregnancies. We had very few folks who went into the prison system. And yes, we had some people who were killed by gun violence, but it wasn't because they were criminal. And in each case, they were the victims. When I think about somebody like a Tony Holt or a Messiah, like they weren't trying to hold people up. In fact, it seemed like it was always a woman at the forefront of that in terms of just protecting the women, which is something that they learned in the Mayotte and was reinforced at home. But when I think about all of the landmines that's out there, we were able to get most of our kids past that into adulthood. Now, what they did after that, after 17, 18, 19, who knows? But what we do know is that, and I've said this to Juju, like y'all's handprints are all over the Rowan Center, y'all's handprints are all over the future youth council because you kept giving back and you kept doing things. Saidiya worked every time she came back from college, she worked with the Mayotte, so you'll see her in pictures. Jelani helped to young people to do the mural in the childcare room. ZZ helped to create the logo for the youth council. And once I thought about it, I'm like, she had the youth council holding up the OBS logo, which for some people that might seem a bit strange, but that is exactly what's happening because the next generation is pushing, everybody's pushing forward, pushing up. And so just looking at that and the metaphor of that, I think is really powerful. So I'm proud of the Mayotte, its history, its accomplishments. And when I look at the young people who came out of that, and it was a point made in the commemorative edition that the folks who spent the most amount of time, based on how young they started, the impact was greater. So if you just did a summer with the Mayotte, it's probably some impact, but not a deep impact. But those kids who were in there 5, 10 years, really, you could see Mayotte all over them too. So what do y'all think about that, Khaleesi and Sharifa?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, because I mean, I was probably pretty much in it almost since I was born. I mean, but I was probably like 8, 7 or 8 when OBS and Maya got formed. So I mean, yeah, I mean, learning that stuff from a very young age definitely, shaped me and had a lasting impact on how I view the world.
And what about you, Sharifa? Because I'm also thinking about both of you all had parents that helped with reinforcing those values. Because I think in the newsletter, there's a picture of Sharifa with Angela Davis at a book signing. So her mother was making sure she had positive, influences. And the people that she was learning about in Mayotte, she actually got a chance to meet when the opportunity was there. And so I think that when I look at somebody like a Sharif and to see that she's in environmental justice, that's not really a big surprise in terms of where people land. And I know I did a like a one woman recruitment thing about trying to get some of folks into teaching, and a number of folks went into teaching and are still teaching. Jahari down in, well, she was in North Carolina for many years. Now she's in Atlanta. We had Sarah here. So people went into teaching and are still there, and they're taking the values and the experiences they had into the classroom, much like you said, Juju. So Sharifa, what do you remember about being those encounters that were inside of the Mayotte, but also being affirmed on the outside?
I would say I had a lot of the inside outside experience. My mom definitely reinforced like pro-blackness at church, at home. She definitely colored in all the pictures since I was a kid, got me all the black Barbies, like no white Barbies at the house. We're not playing that game. Yeah, we had a 365 black calendar where there's a piece of black history on it every day. And so, yeah, I would say it definitely shaped and influenced who I am. Kind of like you said, Khaleesi, like I look for the black characters, whether it's the cartoon characters or the superheroes or even just the regular people, because of what I learned at OBS. And same thing with, like how I looked at myself when I was like looking for a career, like even when I was younger and I wanted to be a doctor, I looked at Dr. Ben Carson or I looked at Dr. Mae Jemison because those were my heroes, right? And not, you know, some other random doctor. And so, yeah, it shaped who I was and it shaped who I am today for sure.
Yeah. I think even
I'd like
people's
to
choice.
say that.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'd like to say that we talk about the impact of the program, but the program is programs like MyEye and YCPD are invaluable, especially in this day and time, right? Because we have such an individualistic society.
Yes.
Everybody's separated, everybody's individual. The one thing I can say about the children that have come through MyEye, many of them reach back out to me. I have counseled them as adults through things, which keep it keeps that bond of a community. Those children have a support system. I think about people like Tiggy, who've reached out to me recently about her service in the military. I mean, I've talked to many children that I knew as little kids, including DJ, who was at one point our only white child in the program. And I happened to ask him as an adult, how did it impact him? And he said, oh, I mean, you know, like, how did he feel about having to come there being the only white child? And he said, as a kid, he did not like it. But as an adult, it has had helped him see the world in a different light. And to have him come back and talk, it not only these programs not only unite the Black community, they unite the entire community. Like I said, speaking to DJ as an adult, speaking to Niall and Tiggy as an adult, seeing Sharifa as an adult, this is these programs are important because without community, we cannot defeat this beast.
And
Especially in a world that values individualism, now we got people who don't even talk to other people, they talking to AI. We have got to continue these programs.
and a
We
couple
have.
of, I'd like to add that, I saw something, the video just this morning where the sister was saying, it was an Asian lady, I think, and she was like, people don't realize that not only Black people benefited off of the civil rights movement, but there were, other minorities that benefited from that, right? Women, Asian, et cetera, Hispanics. And then the other thing, going back to the DJ point, is that to me, that is the biggest problem is all the white, the white flight, right? They want to move way out and way far away. So then when they do get around Black people, they don't understand us. They don't understand that we may be a little bit more boisterous. We may talk a little bit more loudly, right? And so now they think that, oh my God, something's about to happen. Oh my God, I'm in danger. It's like, no, we might be just joking, but this is how we joke or how we whatever. Or even just to like not be astounded by, oh, is that your hair and touching somebody? Certain things that, or not seeing us as people, it's like, okay, if somebody like DJ, he can understand, certain things or pick up on certain cues or have a certain experience where he realizes, all right, cool, like I'm not in danger. I'm not, these guys don't mean no harm to me. As a matter of fact, they open their arms and embrace me. You know what I mean? So that would be.
And you talk about DJ. I remember, I think he realized that before he was an adult, but it might have been on an unconscious level. But when he was about to be sent to a private high school, he stayed there for a minute and he couldn't relate because he was used to a more working class environment with Black people. And so he's like, this is not working for me. So he was taken out of that school. And you know, when I say y'all's handprints are all over the Rowan Center and things, he is now a licensed electrician. And so he's done some electrical work at the center. And so that whole thing about giving back and freely and being able to be in a society that's multiracial, where you're not like you said, how like, ooh, Black people, I gotta go in the Black community because the Rowan Center is in the heart of the Black community. And so just being here and being grounded and understanding, like you said, the culture and being able to determine when is it hostile and when is it friendly. If you can't do that, then you always are going to be thinking, yeah, I can't go past north of Del Mar because they told me something bad is going to happen. And so I think in terms of just getting y'all ready for the real world and being able to navigate and fluently go into various situations, whether it be community, corporate, or whatever, I think it's really been important to see how y'all have done that. And I think you've done it very successfully. As you were talking, I was thinking about Chris Brown, who started doing these animes and writing short stories. I'm like, I wonder where that came from. All the talent that we came through here that we were trying to, like, you know, nourish and cultivate and help bloom. I think, like I said, I'm just so proud. And so really, to your point, Juju, I felt like I got just as much out of it as I was given. And I know, for example, just having different people be a part of the mamas and babas that were doing the program, like, I'm all for outdoors. I love outdoors. I love nature. But I would have never taken these kids camping.
That was my favorite part.
Yeah, like Juju brought that aspect in, and I'm like, I was there going down the Merrimack River, but that I wouldn't have been instigating that. But again, all the different the different interests and people brought into the Mayotte to make sure that you all had a full and instructive but fun time during the Mayotte. So yeah. We got pictures of you, Sharifa, with your little wire hanger doing a hot dog or maybe it was a marshmallow. So you all had nothing but joy on y'all's faces. So just going through the pictures was just, you know, really was just a good thing for me, particularly at this time when everything in the world seemed like it's going to hell in a handbasket. But just seeing how you all turned out and what you're doing. And to your point, Juju, like, still feeling like you can come back to mamas and babas and say, hey, because I've helped people through bad relationships, divorces, choosing schools, you know, all of that, that, you know, we want the young people, when you all went through the rites of passage, the adults made a pledge too. And so we got to keep that pledge that, you know, we're going to make sure you know, that we're here for you no matter how old you get. Yeah. And so that piece is also missing. I see a lot of people say, I want nothing to do with these young people. What? How you not going to have nothing to do with young people when they literally are future? These are going to be the people that are going to be feeding you when your bud is laying up in the nursing home, okay?
That part.
I bet you I'm going to know some of the people that are going to be in the nursing home. They're going to say, Mama Jamal, I got you. I'll make sure you get fed. That's the investment part of it. That's the dividend part of it. So, yeah, I don't see how you could go through life and not try to have some influence or impact on at least one child.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, you know, in our last few minutes, I really want, we're going to do the Youth Creed together, but I also want to ask you all, what do you see some of the challenges now for young people as we, you know, the growing authoritarianism, the lack of democracy, we got incompetent Congress, all the checks and balances that were supposed to make sure we didn't be at this place are pretty much dismantled. And so a lot of people are feeling helpless, hopeless. What advice or what inspiration do you have for young people going forward when it looks like there's nothing for them? You know, everything is collapsing. Now they're taking away the student loan amnesty. I mean, it's just all kind of stuff that just makes you wonder what will you be able to do in this kind of society when there's so many obstacles that's being presented.
My advice to them is find community, find them programs. My advice to parents is find the programs, put your child in an African-centered program. Because without identity, without community, again, you cannot address these issues and you will end up hopeless. Those kids need to know the Kwanzaa principles, which, you know, like, they need to know them. It's not just words. It's not just the day like Christmas is here, it's gone. They need to know that it's a lifelong struggle. And if these children of today don't get that, our struggle can be lost because they don't know where to go. They do become discouraged. They do start feeling hopeless. When you have your child in one of those in a program like mine, they learn the resilience. They learn the strength and they build community. It has to happen. It's not a recommendation. It is like literally crucial.
Mandate.
It's a mandate. And yes, and it should be a mandate for every Black family to do it, just like it's a mandate for every Jewish child to go to Jewish school and every Chinese child goes to Chinese school. Every Irish child take their little Irish dance. It should be damn near mandatory. I mean, I feel that strongly about it.
I hear you. Sharifa, what about you? What's your advice?
I mean, I guess I second what Mama Juju said about like how necessary it is for us to be involved in Black community spaces and in programs. I would say having that community makes it so that when you do feel hopeless, you know that there's somebody you can turn to, and you don't, think that you have to end it all, or if you even are considering that, you know a therapist you can talk to so that you don't take a permanent step to a temporary problem, right? And so I would say, be in these type of programs, be in community with one another, find something to do, right? Like find a cause to belong to, because then that's a way to fight against like the hopelessness. I know especially like coming into my 30s, it's been challenging. Not to be hopeless, where it's like, I should be looking forward to the future, but the world that we're in today is not something really to look forward to. And so by having something to strive for, it's made it so that I have something to look forward to. But also bringing others along, right? Whether that's like, participating in community programs with youth yourself, so then you're getting some of that positive energy, you're giving it back. I would say we live in a more global world than we did when I was a kid, and so like looking at options outside the US is definitely something, whether that's like learning a language, traveling abroad, finding housing abroad and being a safe space for others to come and join you. I think that's just the kind of world we have to think about now, because it's not always safe where we are, but that doesn't mean we're abandoning, our culture or our community here. We're just finding a way to create a safe haven for others outside of the US.
Yeah, for me, I mean, like Juju said, the Kwanzaa, the Nguzu Saba, like it's very important to be creative, right? To be to work together on certain things. And you have to have some a certain amount of grit about you. Like it's not gonna be easy, it's not gonna be given to you. As a matter of fact, there's probably gonna be a lot of obstacles put in your way, but as long as you keep working and keep trying to be creative, think about how to overcome those obstacles and make a change, or if, at the very least, make a way for yourself. Yeah, I think that's important because eventually, things are cyclical and they'll come back around. It looked a little bleak right now, but hopefully, in another year or two or three or whatever, things will be on the uptick and it won't be as bad as it is now. So, just kind of keep plugging away.
Yeah, and I would say that only our struggle is going to change that. Only struggle makes change. And so if we sit back and let folks just run over us, we're going to get what we get. And so I think we do have to be hopeful. And the only way that you can be hopeful is you understand what your worth is and you understand what your place is and that you have a right to be here. And so one of the things that helps guide me is, what kind of world am I helping to create for children to thrive and to be successful? And so when I'm dealing with all these other issues, whether it be police brutality, whether it be healthcare, that's the thing that I'm thinking about. Like, what's going to make it good for young people? And I think if many of us use that same lens, we probably would be doing more, because if we can't protect the young people in their future, then all of us are doomed as a people. And so so that's the thing that's always been keeping me hopeful and involved, is like the young people, the children, and what they're doing, what they need, what they're seeing, what they're experiencing, and how we are wrapping our arms around them as a community, especially in a, at a time when they're being forced to be isolated, to be by themselves. And that's not how humans thrive. You don't thrive being alone. That's just detrimental. And we've seen that with most of these school shooters have been isolated and bullied and all of that. And so yes, I think we have our work cut out for us. We've been doing it for 46 years. We hope people will join us on January 24th when we celebrate the 46th anniversary of the Organization for Black Struggle and the Youth Council for Positive Development. That is going to be, it's both a hybrid. And so that means you can join online or you can join in person. But we will be at the University of Missouri. And, you know, we're going to launch our Black Archive Project, our Black Legacy Project, because it's no organization in St. Louis grassroots that has 45 years of history. And so we are going to be sharing that. Some of our documents have already been digitized at the Missouri State Historical Society. And so we want to introduce people to that so they get to know more about the impact, not just about us, but what you need to do in order to have an impact in your community. So it's going to be a learning vibe, and we hope that people will join us. More information is on my website, but it's also on the Youth Council's website. I want to thank Mama Juju, Alisi, and Sharifa, and you really all the young people that came through my eye that really touched me and Juju as human beings, because again, it's a reciprocal thing. We wouldn't be who we are without the interaction with you all, and vice versa. So that's the beauty of the collective and having a common value system and a common way of looking at the world. So thank you for coming on today, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.